We have a lot of videos of the podcast and various other tutorials on YouTube. You can subscribe to our channel at mixingmusicpodcast.com/YouTube. Happy mixing and enjoy the show.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One, two, three.
Hello and welcome back to Mixing Music. I'm your host, DK. Today we have a very awesome episode. Basically just FAQs, some basic information that people have asked me, whether via email or via Instagram messages, and people have asked me questions. And today I want to take this episode to answer a few of them, the most common questions. As many as I can before I hit my, my usual 20-minute time limit. But first one, we're just going to get right into it. The first one is from a guy who messaged me on Instagram, Anthony from Indiana. Shout out to you. He asked me about signal flow. Sends, auxiliary buses, mains, stereo outs, etc., etc., and how it all works. Luckily, most DAWs work very, very similarly because most DAWs are trying to emulate kind of an analog console kind of vibe. But I'm going to be talking in the perspective of Pro Tools. So when I'm looking at Pro Tools, I'm looking at inserts, sends, input, output, auxiliary buses, master buses, and VCAs, as well as instrument tracks and MIDI tracks, but we're not going to be talking about those this time around. But basically, it's kind of a simple process. With sends, you can take a send, so it makes a copy of the signal. So oftentimes, you use sends for a reverb track where it goes to an auxiliary track, which is not an audio track, and you put a reverb that's 100% wet in an auxiliary bus, and have that input be the output of the send, so that way it sends a copy of that exact track into the reverb, but it's 100% wet. So now you can manage multiple tracks with the same send and send just a little bit amount of that copy of that track into the same reverb. So that way you can use one reverb for multiple tracks and you can change the amount of reverb per track or instrument. It's really useful. Another thing that you can do is, this is useful for sidechaining. So if you wanted to sidechain, let's say, a synth or whatever, you could send a copy in the send. I like to put the fader at zero and then the send fader at zero and put a pre-fader. And then you, once you have that send in a bus, then you can put a compressor on the track that you want to sidechain. And have the input of the compressor have use that bus. So that way you're not actually having to use the sound of the kick to trigger it, in the sense that like the sound of the kick is not actually doubling up. It's just a quiet copy. So there's actually no place for that send copy to be playing music. It's only just triggering the sidechain. I know that's a little bit confusing. I should do a better job explaining that, but it's hard to do without actually showing you in a video or something like that. Maybe I should do something like that. Hit me up if you want me to do YouTube videos, because I need that motivation. But another thing that's really awesome is VCAs. And VCAs in Pro Tools are really, really useful. And to be honest, could be used a lot more, and I use them quite often. when I can. VCAs are really awesome because it does not, you know, have any insert or sends. It's honestly kind of just like a control unit where if you group a set of tracks, which you can do with Command G, selecting tracks and then Command G, you can have a single fader. So the problem with having a group track is, let's say you have a set of 6 horn tracks. If you group them as one horn track, let's say, so if you do that, then any sort of automation or any sort of volume change that you do on one track, it'll change everything else. But if you group them and then put in a VCA track and set the VCA input to be that group, the horn group, then with the VCA fader, you can actually control all of the horns, which controls its individual volume. It's not a bus, so it doesn't go through that. It's literally just controlling the group. But if you have a VCA bus, then all of a sudden the default of if you touch one of the saxophones, it doesn't change all of the saxophones. So you can have a VCA, which controls the entire group after you group them. And then if you have a VCA, then Pro Tools will recognize that there's a VCA there. So then it'll automatically switch over to then now most of the time you can change the individual tracks. So it's really nice if you're tired of hitting Shift Command G and turning off all the groups all the time just to do a little small independent move or volume change, then it might be useful to put in a VCA so that way you can change the entire group, but you can also change individual tracks. Just a little thought for you there. Really useful. One thing that people don't think about as far as these routing and auxes is that Pro Tools created a new shortcut a few versions ago, where if you go to a send or if you go to the output of Pro Tools, then you can see the buses, obviously your interface, input and outputs, the buses, but at the very bottom of that little menu that drops down, there's the button that says new track. And when you click on new track, it'll pull up the new track menu, and you can name the track. Let's say, since I like to put all my chorus vocals in a bus, so instead of having to individually treat them, I treat them all at once. So once I do that, it's really easy because I select the tracks that I want for the hook vocals. I hold down Shift Option and I hit New Track in that menu in the output. I click on the output and go down to New Track, and then I rename it to Hook Bus or whatever it is. And then it automatically renames the bus. It creates a new bus. It renames the bus and it routes all the tracks to that bus automatically. And it creates an aux bus automatically. So it's way faster than doing everything manually. And let's talk about the reason why I do that. Yeah. So I create aux buses very often, not super duper often. Some of y'all get really, really crazy with them. But the idea is, I want to keep the fidelity. I mean, I could talk a lot about like phase and how EQ changes phase and stuff, but that's not as big of a reason as just efficiency. So I have all of my, usually if I have a big group, then for example, the drums, I put it into the drum bus. And yes, I'll treat each individual track of the drums individually, but then I'll treat the entire drum bus, do a little bit of compression, a little bit of EQ on the entire drum kit to really, you know, do those last finishing touches on it. Maybe with hip hop music, I have the stems for the beat. Not only will I, you know, do some treatment on the separate tracks of the beat, but I'll also do a beat bus where I send all of the beat stems into a single bus so I can do some compression, limiting, maybe some EQ on that individual beat bus. So like over the entire beat. Oftentimes with vocals, I'll add individual treatment, some individual treatment if needed, but most of the time if it's the same verse but they've tracked it twice because they overlap each other or something like that, instead of just putting the same plugins, copying, pasting them into both of the individual tracks, I'll put it into a bus and do it once. That's partially for processing, computer processing, save processing there by not putting twice as many plugins on, but as well as efficiency. It's way more efficient than doing the same exact thing twice. But you run into problems when you do this. For example, ad-libs, oftentimes in hip-hop music, you have like yelling ad-libs like woo, and then you have like yeah, like really quiet ad-libs. So I have to, like, in the individual track before it goes to the aux where with the verses or the hook, I'll hyper compress the ad lib so it's super consistent and even before it hits my aux bus, just because I don't want any compressors in the aux bus being triggered by the loud spikes in the ad libs. So feel it out if it works with your system. And honestly, there's no right answer for this. So whatever helps you and works with you. But you do, I would study a couple YouTube videos and understand how buses work, how VCAs work, how auxes work, how sends work. And obviously, inserts is where you put your plugins. yeah, hopefully that helps. Thank you. If you have any more questions about that, I might do an entire episode based around that, maybe even do a video, but not really quite sure. So thank you, Anthony from Indiana, for asking me that one. The next one that I've been asked is a lot about gain staging. Gain staging is a very interesting one. The concept of gain staging in the past, and is so now, is recording as loud as possible without clipping. This is very, very useful even now. Not as big of a deal now, but this is a problem that I see sometimes when people send me mixes to do, and all of the tracks are super duper quiet. When the tracks, the noise floor doesn't really change. It's always at like negative 100 or negative 90, depending on how good your gear is. But there's always that hiss that's quietly in the background. And it's inherent in audio gear. Like, you can't really take it out. Like, technology has gotten better where it's very, very minimal and you can't even hear it. And with acoustic, you know, songs, it's very apparent because acoustic instruments are quiet, so you have to crank the gain. But the idea is that if you record as hot as possible, then it separates the distance between the noise floor and the actual audio. Because by the time it gets to mastering, mixing and mastering, everything will have to get louder, and it's impossible to make the source sound louder without raising the noise floor. So if you record hot from the beginning, then you don't have to raise the volume during the mixing and mastering stage as much, so the noise floor stays lower. Don't take this too extreme and start recording everything super duper hot and normalizing everything before you send it to the mix engine. No, like that's not the best thing ever. Like, and clip, you can clip, and clipping, unless you do it on purpose as part of like the taste or the sound of the song, like clipping is something that cannot be fixed, right? And so if you don't want it, don't clip it. But at the same time, like, I've gotten some mixes where they clipped it on purpose and it actually kind of sounds cool. Record as hot as possible. This whole idea of recording at negative 18 or negative 15 or zero LUFS, like, we live in the digital age, and if you're recording in Pro Tools, that's not really a thing. Just record it as hot as possible, but not like super duper hot. If that means negative 15 for you, if that's your goal, fine, that's fine. But as long as you don't clip on accident and as long as it's as hot as possible, like, it's going to be fine. You're okay. You can always turn it down with the clip gain and whatnot. But you cannot undistort a track once it's distorted. So be careful with that. So yeah, hopefully that was good. Let's talk about recording vocals real quick. This is a big one for me as I've been mixing tons and tons of tracks. If you follow me on Instagram, you can see on my stories that I'm mixing multiple tracks every single day. I'm so busy and I love it. And it's a lot of fun. But at the same time, I get a lot of mixes that people email me where they obviously did not send it on great recorded vocals. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not a gearhead at all. And I don't think gear is the best thing to invest your money on as a business because there's not a lot of ROI from gear. But at the same time, if there's any one thing that's going to affect your sound a lot, it's going to be the microphone, especially the vocal microphone. I can argue about microphones with any other instrument, but since the vocals are kind of the main part of most songs, and it's either hit or miss. Like, if the vocals don't sound good, then the song sucks. Like, to a certain degree, that's the case most of the time. So having a really nice microphone is really underrated, and people have kind of gotten a little bit lazy with that, in my opinion. I would say stop spending money on plugins, stop spending money on software, stop spending money on analog hardware, stop spending money on everything else, but please spend money on a microphone. I can tell cheap microphone versus a nice microphone immediately. A nice microphone... Well, let's talk about a cheap microphone, actually. A cheap microphone will have a really tinny, really bright and pokey, like 8 to 11K, like this 9K-ish area. it's like it's the sibilance, but it might sometimes is slightly above sibilance. And it's just really harsh and really bright. And the speakers that I use are really, really good that hear that frequency. And it's like really annoying. And when I get a really nice microphone, that's not there. It's really balanced and smooth and control. Another thing is usually with cheaper microphones, that 3K area, it tends to be a little bit pokey. Obviously, the resonances of the voice and the performance and all of that have to do with it as well. But oftentimes with nicer microphones, you just have less resonating frequencies. And it's a lot smoother, and I have to EQ a lot less. Let me say EQ specific frequencies, like really tight notches going down a lot less. And my EQs look a lot more pretty and a lot less like crazy. I've had certain sessions where like I'm screaming at myself, like, oh my gosh, this is so difficult and it's so hard. And also like, what is going on with this vocal? Because the vocal wasn't recorded well, and it was recorded on a bad microphone in a bad room. And all of that above. So please do not skimp out on buying a nice microphone. You know what's a really great microphone that's not that expensive? The SM7B. I'm using it to record my voice right now on the podcast. And it's great. You have to crank the gain on it because it's a quiet mic. It's a quiet dynamic mic. But because it's a dynamic mic, you don't have to worry about the room as much because it doesn't pick up the room as much. And it sounds great. And it's really smooth. It's not as smooth as like a C12, but nobody has $8,000 to spend on a single microphone. But anyways, if you're looking to buy a new microphone, there's a website called audiotestkitchen.com where you can actually listen and compare different microphones. Please do that. Use audiotestkitchen.com and think about your mic choices, and please do not cheap out on a microphone. What I mean by cheaping out is anything less than $400. Because to be fair, you can buy a pretty nice microphone for less than $400. But if you're trying to get to that next level, at least spend $500, $600. And if you have $2,000 to spend, then you're going to have a really great microphone. For reals, though, that's the only piece of gear that I do think that you should invest your money on. Like, I myself am pretty nerdy, and I've like gone to the point where I built my own C12 just because I wanted that sound in the studio, and I didn't want to spend $8,000, so I just spent about a little bit less than that. Well, look, actually a lot less than that in parts, and just built it myself. And I'm not going to talk about that, but we can get really nerdy if we want to. But recording vocals, yeah, please record on a nice microphone. You know, another mic, if you're really going to cheap out and like really you have no other choice, first off, never ever use a USB microphone as much as possible as far as like music recording. For like dialogue, podcasts, whatever, it's fine. USB microphones, unfortunately, do not sound as great. Generally speaking, they're have more functionality, and they have to spend money putting the converter into it. So that means they cheaped out on the actual components just to keep the cost low. It economically is impossible to make a USB microphone that's cheap sound good, because they have to allocate costs to other parts of the mic and other features. So, but as well as, use what you have. Don't ever let your equipment be an excuse to not make music, because making music and being creative is way more important. And it's dumb to be insecure about stupid stuff like equipment. But at the same time, if you're able to, like if you're going to cheap out on a microphone, you know what's another great sounding microphone that's actually not horrible is the SM58, the one that you see on stage. I know that's weird, but like it sounds smooth and it's great. Like it has a couple pokey frequencies usually, but I let my clients borrow one of my SM58s, a local client, because his mic sucked. And it sounds way better. Don't underestimate dynamic microphones. But then mixing it down is a total another story, where dynamic microphones are darker, so don't be afraid to crank that high end if you need to, especially with more pop vocal type stuff. Let's talk a little bit about recording drums, and I think this will be the last FAQ question today. Drums, recording drums. I know that a lot of y'all record and or mix real drums, and I've spent many, many years recording and mixing real drums. I have not always been doing just hip-hop, and to be fair, I still to this day only about 85, okay, I'm going to be honest, about 90% of my clientele is hip-hop. But every once in a while, I'll get like a really funky Wolfpack kind of like Earth, Wind & Fire, Stevie Wonder kind of vibey track. And I'll be like, oh, shoot. And I just destroy it. And maybe I'll do a mix breakdown with that song. But I love drums, and recording drums has been the one part of the tracking part that I miss because I don't track really anymore. Tracking drums is very difficult, but at the same time, it's infinitely creative and flexible, and it's really awesome. It's a lot of fun. It's like a challenge that you try to solve, and it can be really fun and entertaining. Drums, the secret to recording drums is having a really good drum set and drummer. Obviously, not cheaping out and getting that $100 set for 5 microphones. As long as you don't get that, honestly, if you just get a bunch of SM57s around the entire drum kit, like, that would actually sound pretty good. But if you don't cheap out on the microphones, like, all the way, you could cheap out a little bit, that's fine. It's not as important as the vocals, to be honest, in my opinion, but people will argue with me against that. Having a really good, nice drum kit, you know what makes a kick sound great? It's not the position, it's not the microphone, it's having a good kick drum and having it tuned well. You know what else? It's also having a great drummer that knows how hard to hit the kick drum. Have you ever recorded a drummer that hits their drums so damn hard that they have no tone in their drum kit? Yeah. Recording them, and they're always so prideful about their drumming too, but recording them is never a good experience, and you can't get tone out of their drum kit. So, like, for a drummer, like, honestly, tuning the actual drum kit and the drummer is more important than the signal chain and the microphones. Honestly, that'll change the sound the most. That's the secret with a drum recording. As well as, you know what? Watch YouTube videos and figure out the different techniques. Different techniques sound different in different rooms. If you have high ceilings, that's usually better for drums. And often with drums, like, having a perfectly dry room is not the best situation. Experiment. Don't be afraid. There's no right answer. There's just a vibe. And get a better drum set. Okay, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening to Mixing Music. If you like what you hear, then please leave a 5-star review. I know a few of you have left 5-star reviews, and I really, really appreciate you. And I read what you say, and it really does help my show. It's a free way that y'all can help my show. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please rate my review 5 stars and leave a little comment. Say, like, hey, man, or something like that, you know. if you'd like to see my day-to-day life where I'm mixing music constantly, and or if you'd like to just message me, DM me more FAQ type questions, I can answer them and maybe even turn it into a podcast episode. You can hit me up at DEEKEI Mixes on Instagram. Hit me up. Thank you for listening. Happy mixing and stay saucy.
1, 2, 3.
This episode of Mixing Music with DK has been brought to you by LaunchPod Media. If you want to start a podcast, make sure to start it right with LaunchPod Media. The Mixing Music Podcast is proud to say that we have a lot of free resources outside of the actual podcast. Visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/links to find access to our free PDFs and free resources.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.